I have something to say. It's better to zombie takeout than fade away.
To episode 200 of Zombie Takeout, the B-Movie and Cult Movie Podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listeners submitted. This is from Jen Miller, and actually it's from a private message on Facebook that I asked her for permission to read on the show. In reference to our last episode, Beaches, she said, "So finally getting a chance to listen to the April Fool's episode, and already had to stop it at a cross between B. Arthur and Nathan Fillion." A little later, she sent another message saying, "End at beaches taking place on the lunar surface." And then afterwards, she sent a third message saying, "LOL, nicely done." Thank you, Jen.
Yeah. I wonder if that's our last April Fool's, because...
Well, that was the idea we came up with just after we did the Switch episode of Trailer Clash.
Yeah.
We've had that idea for like 2 years, and we came up with the big bus in the interim, so... Hopefully by next year we'll come up with something else. No ideas so far.
I don't know. I mean, we've done a lot of April Fool's episodes in our esteemed history of podcasting.
We've done five.
Five?
Two for TAS, three for ZTL.
Oh, okay. That's still quite a bit, if you think about it.
The Trailer Clash Switch was our first April Fool's Day episode. We didn't do April Fool's for our first 2 years.
You're right. Well, I thought we did a maybe will not be seen tonight kind of thing.
Possibly, I don't recall that, but then we did the Trailer Clash thing, we did Big Bus, and now this.
I thought we said we were doing the Big Bus, and then we didn't do the Big Bus.
Maybe that was possible. I have faith that we'll come up with something by next year. You got almost a year.
All right.
And continuing listener submitted, Danny Meeks on Google+, in the comments for the trailer for this week's movie, said, "One of my favorite movies as a kid. The soundtrack introduced me to Queen as well." And of course, that brings us to this week's movie, which is from 1986, Highlander. And of course, the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by nostalgia, turning even the biggest pieces of crap into unassailable classics.
And also brought to you by foreign accents. A Belgian playing a Scotsman, a Scotsman playing a Spaniard-Egyptian, and whatever the hell Clancy Brown was supposed to be. It's all interchangeable.
They said he came from one of the most ancient families.
He was from the steppes of Russia, really.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. I forgot that one.
But what the accent actually was, the fuck knows?
Just a growl.
Clancy Brown specializes in the weird accent that True. Really has no yeah. geography.
Marconi and John Dies at the End.
We talked about that in John Dies at the End and the episode of Enterprise he did. They're all just weird accents that you can't.
Right.
Trace that he made up.
Pretty much.
All right. This is a pretty simple impromptu plot summary, if you think about it. We have these immortals who are living among us. They have been around for centuries. And they're, I guess, this kind of a King of the Mountain kind of game that they've been playing yeah. for millennia or whatever. And the objective, of course, is to have only one left. We get the feeling that there were alliances formed, that there are some good and evil immortals, but they really don't go into enough detail of it.
There's an obvious alliance in the movie, the Connor, the main character, and another immortal he has a conversation with.
Right, right. So you get the they suggest that there are alliances in play, but we don't really get to see them at work.
And they're all temporary anyway, because there can be only one.
Well, right, right. If it comes down to it, they will just have to kill each other. It begins, actually, you kind of get the feeling the first one that he fights, that they may have been friends at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when he sees him, he's kind of like, "Oh, you too, you know? I really wasn't looking to kill you," kind of thing.
Right, right.
And So yes, they get to they the only way they can be killed, they're not really immortal, is because if they get their head chopped off, then they lose their powers and they die. And of course, the person that does it collects their power, or gathers it, if you will,
a bit of a fireworks display.
With a bit of fireworks display, and gains that power to move on. The ultimate prize, of course, it's vague in the beginning, and then in the end, you're kind of like, really? That's it? Kind of?
Yeah.
But it's essentially that the game is over. They gain, you know, superior, you know...
They basically can read everybody's mind in the world.
Right, right. And
just be incredibly noisy.
And become mortal. And
that too.
So what we have here, we follow the story of the Highlander, the Belgian who's born in the Highlands, and you know, he finds out that he's one of them the hard way, and they believe he's a witch, drive them out of their village. He's then taken under the tutelage of an older, wiser immortal who, well, a questionable accents, of course, again.
Yes.
Ramirez, do you say?
Like, yeah.
Anyway.
Kind of an ironic casting there.
Oh, yeah. I
had to be intentional.
I really think a lot of this was intentional.
Yeah.
But anyway. he's actually forced out of his village. He finds out the hard way from the Kurgan, who is, of course, the heavy. When he tries to kill him in battle, he just stabs him and then doesn't get the chance to cut his head off. And that's when he's forced out of his village. Then he's trained, and you know, your montage scene.
Mm-hmm. I actually have in my notes obligatory training montage complaint.
You gotta run on the beach.
Because I don't have anything specific to say. I just want to lodge an obligatory training montage complaint.
And of course, the faraway place where the gathering has to happen, where else would it be than New Jersey?
We're so exotic here.
Yes. Well, I mean, if it was good enough for Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton,
true.
It's where shit gets done. I wonder if Burr and Hamilton dueled in front of a Silver Cup sign.
Hmm.
I now want to Photoshop something.
Yeah.
But yes, they are then loose in New York City, where the police, of course, are trying to figure out why the fuck people are getting their heads chopped off and what's going on, and hilarity ensues.
Now, it opened with a wrestling scene.
Yeah.
A scene shot at a wrestling, or taking place at a wrestling match, which at the time seemed like an odd choice, but thinking about it just now, it makes perfect sense because, you know,
it
it's
does.
A contest.
It does.
It's a little on the nose, actually, having thought about it a bit.
I've seen this movie, I don't know how many times, because it was one of those things when you see on cable.
Yeah, you watch it.
You watch it all the way through. I have you can probably count on one hand the amount of times I've seen it from the very beginning.
I didn't exactly remember the wrestling montage. It didn't surprise me. It wasn't like, you know, I never noticed that before, but it never really caught my attention before. I also haven't seen this in probably 15 years. It's been quite a while for me.
Yeah, it's been a little while now since the last time I've seen it. But it's definitely like the first time I've seen the beginning in many, many years. I kind of remember, I thought Big John Studd was in the beginning, but it was just some dude that kind of...
Looks like him.
Looked like him. I don't know who there was. I was a WWF kid. I don't know the other leagues that they were. It looks like more from a Southern league. The Freebird.
Yeah. Now, just getting real general for a second, I can list the positives of this movie for me very quickly. Connery and Brown's performances, and a throwaway line in which Ramirez calls Connor a pendejo. That I never caught until this time. I probably didn't know what it meant before this. That's it. Those are the positives for me.
Really? This
movie
has...
is incredibly dated, and the sword fighting scenes are comical. It's basic stage combat. They didn't
try
specifically for swords, I don't think. Lambert's performance is at times wizzo bad.
He is English as a second language.
Well, that too. The irony, for those who may not be familiar with the movie that I mentioned before, Connery is Scottish. He's supposed to be the Egyptian Spaniard. Lambert is Belgian, I think, doing a generic European accent. And he's supposed to be the Scot.
And he kind of slips into a Scottish accent every now and again, too.
A few words that are very, very Scottish, like lock right. and what have you.
I would compare the performance much more closely to Kevin Costner than Wiseau, actually.
On the whole, probably, but there are points when he gets Wiseau bad.
There are some parts where, of course, he is funny.
I also seem to remember more lightning during the quickening.
Yeah, the quickening...
There was a little bit of, like, 80s sci-fi blue, you know, electrical lines coming up on some cars, and then some windows blowing out, of course, and that's it.
Yeah, lots of broken glass. And then when I was doing the research on this, you know, the IMDb searches and what these people have done, it made sense what we were seeing exactly. The director,
Russell Mulcahy. Did
Russell
a lot
Mulcahy,
of music videos back in the day.
Right, was a music video king. Mm-hmm. And if you look, I mean, early 80s music videos, this is the motherfucker that directed Video Killed the Radio Star. Think about that.
The first music video.
Well, it wasn't the first.
Well, no, I mean, but the first Brits played on doing, MTV. It's what I meant.
Right. The Brits were doing videos all the way back into the 70s.
Right.
But, I mean, it is the OG, you know, video in America, really. So... Yeah, he was back then, and they had those certain things. Each video had to have glass breaking. This motherfucker, I believe, directed Hungry Like the Wolf video.
Probably.
I think I saw that in his credits.
Like, all of the classic videos from the early 80s were his, I think.
Crazy, crazy shit. And, of course, they all had a lot of the elements that you see
in this movie.
In this. The use of breaking glass, of water,
yeah.
Just... insane shit like that.
And I don't think he makes the transition to features quite as well as others like Michel Gondry. Started in music videos, made a great transition into live action, into feature films. Spike Jones.
King, of
thing.
Course, is Spike Jones. Yeah. He's the, you know.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of music videos, the flashback scenes to ancient Scotland looked like a cross between Holy Grail and a Spinal Tap video.
With the hair?
Yeah, the hair and the sort of generic barbarian costumes.
I didn't have that much of a problem with those. I mean, they didn't stand out all that much as part of it, but it wasn't anything over the top.
And the battle scenes in those flashbacks, particularly that big one with the Kurgan.
Yeah.
It was almost as bad as Adoichi.
I liked the weirdness of that scene though, where nobody was fighting.
Yeah, that was an interesting twist. And they telegraph it ahead of time when he says, you know, when Kurgan says, everybody leave him alone.
Well, yeah. But him just walking the battlefield, fight me! Somebody fight me!
Yeah. And I can kind of see why we thought it was cool in the day. You know, lots of swords, a fairly original concept, and look at the videos from the era.
Yeah.
It just doesn't hold up. That's my issue with it. And it's sort of the sacred cow for, you know, sci-fi fantasy.
Well, yeah, I disagree, because I think, I mean, it's over the top. And I think it's purposely so, almost to the level of an impressionist painting. It's so over the top. But come on, think about it. The swords knocking down stones and
yes,
stuff.
Yes.
And I mean, it just...
Mm-hmm.
They wanted this director to... just blow this thing away, you know?
Possibly, yeah.
I think definitely. I mean, the sword fights, you know, where they're just knocking down walls with the swords and stuff. I mean, I don't care how many times you fold the metal.
No, it's not going to go through stone, no.
It's not just go through stone. It's going to destroy bricks.
Or that trick that Ramirez pulls with the tree. You're not going to do that with one hand.
And yeah, the fight with Ramirez and the Kurgan, where they just, I mean, destroy the whole castle,
yeah.
Is still a fucking classic, where there's nothing left but the staircase at the very end.
And when Kurgan bursts through the door, you can see that the door is foam core.
Yeah.
It's stark white on the inside.
But what I love most about this, more than anything, and maybe, you know, what's changed my opinion... from watching this, because I think when we talked about in the news about them remaking this, I was like, you can't do that. Yeah. Now I'm very intrigued about a remake of this, if it should be directed in the right hands. You could go in a couple directions on it, but anyway.
I have something for that later.
You're right. Well, obviously we'll get to that later. But the script, the story itself, and what blew me away was when I researched it, he wrote this while he was still in film school.
Yeah. It was inspired by a trip to Scotland and seeing a suit of armor and wondering, you know, what if this guy was still alive? Also inspired by Ridley Scott's 77 film, The Duelists.
Okay.
Not familiar with The Duelists. I don't know what that had to do with it.
I vaguely, yeah, I think. All right. But anyway.
Speaking of the over the top nature, in the scene following Connor beheading the Kurgan, spoilers for those who haven't seen it, Mulcahy had originally envisioned an animated dragon with the Kurgan's battle helmet emerging from his decapitated body and challenging Connor again. Only after Connor had defeated the dragon would he have received the final quickening and subsequent prize. This idea was eventually cut only due to budgetary constraints.
Well, yeah, this does not come off as a low budget movie. I mean, some people were talking about how, oh, it's low budget.
Not for the time, not at all.
I mean, they say it costs $16 million, the estimate, but I seriously think it costs more than that. I mean, let alone you had Sean fucking Connery in your movie.
Right. And Queen doing the soundtrack.
The cast are no slouches whatsoever, if you think about it. Like, the minor players.
Brown wasn't well known at the time. This wasn't long after Buckaroo Banzai. He wasn't right. Really well known.
No, he was not.
Connery, obviously, was a legend at the time.
But, like, John Polito, who,
true.
He's, you know, doing all sorts of things before that. I mean, it's very interesting. But, man, the script, the story still, I can't say enough about, if you think about it. Every little thing that he threw in there really does mean something. I mean, there aren't many throwaway parts because you start off with the wrestling, right?
Yeah.
The bloodthirsty crowd.
Right. Yeah.
And then you quickly cross over to Scotland where they're chanting about killing them all and ready to you know, they're whipping up the bloodlust. Yeah. I mean, he's making this whole statement about mankind throughout history and how we have not changed a single fucking bit.
Good point.
Even the quick scene in World War II, the irony of, you know, you guys are the master race. Of course, this is an immortal telling
right.
The Nazi that he's sort of the master race.
I really don't have any complaints about the story or the script.
There's a reason why this has endured so much, why this series was popular, and why people wanted to kill someone when they did the sequel to this.
Well, yeah, it ends with him getting the prize. There's no I Smell sequel there.
The story is fucking over.
Yes.
Yeah. There's no wiggle room. Oh. We were born this way. They specifically say it.
And okay, it's over. He gets the prize. The whole thing is over. He is the last immortal. He's eventually going to die. Why the hell are we looking at sequels in another TV series and anything after this point? It should have been a one and done.
Yeah. I mean, the only way you could do a sequel to this is a new round of Immortals Born after he dies.
Right.
That's the only way you do it in the future, which doesn't have the appeal because then you don't have the good historic scenes.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the very beginning, it says they come from the dawn of time, suggesting that there have always been immortals as long as there have been humans. What did they do before swords were invented?
That's a very good question.
Because initially I'm thinking, why haven't they updated the guns, but you can't take a head with a gun.
Right.
But what about before there were swords? You can't take a head with a rock either.
Well, maybe they didn't die until... Well, they had more... Obviously, they had more younger immortals that were born along the way.
Yeah, of course. But if the whole point has always been to have this ongoing contest since the dawn of time, which is the exact line in the prologue to the movie, how did they have the contest before they could take heads? That's just, you know, seems odd to me. Also, there's a scene where the female cop, the love interest, picks up a sword left over from that initial fight and knows exactly what it is and that it's not a fake just from glancing at it 2 seconds off after picking it up off the ground.
She wrote a pretty big book on swords.
Yeah, but still you can't verify that it's real glancing at it for 2 seconds. You could say it looks like this and maybe after, you know, a minute say, yeah, I think it could be real. You can't verify it.
Put it up to her forehead.
Yeah, yeah. Also, and this is just me nitpicking about the swords because I collect them. Kurgan has a sword that can be taken apart and put in a suitcase. That's not going to stand up to much use. He's putting it back together by hand, tightening the bolts by hand and whatnot. Yeah, you're not going to take a head with that. The blade would give before the spine would. Hell, before most of the tissue would.
I think he's been killing people for centuries, though. He knows what he's doing.
Yes, yes. And it's fantasy, so that's why the sword can do it. Because. But it's just... I don't know. It just seemed an unnecessary scene, an unnecessary, you know, stretch of logic when he could have snuck the sword in some other way. He's a big guy.
I see you be done with it and give the magic swords.
Hmm.
Why not, you know?
Yeah. Again, obligatory complaint about the training montage. And I just want to get back to this. I called it out at the very beginning. The pendejo line.
any word of Spanish or the whole like, what is this haggis?
Yeah, yeah. In a Scottish accent, which was hilarious.
Yes.
But I've just never caught it or didn't know what pendejo. I don't think I knew what pendejo really meant.
I probably didn't back then either.
But it stuck out like a sore thumb. He calls Connor a pendejo.
Yes.
Probably my favorite part of the movie. But, okay, the sword fight between Ramirez and Kurgan in the castle, you know, that's falling apart around them.
Yes.
There's a point there where Kurgan is just holding the sword. Or I will say not Kurgan. Clancy Brown is just holding the sword stationary, and Connery is just whacking at it.
It's like a Graham Chapman in the Black Knight.
Yeah, yeah. And this happens
He's
a couple
the sword
of times.
Out.
You would think for a movie with, I would agree, a very high budget for the time, that has so much sword fighting and they would hire somebody who knows sword fighting and can choreograph something interesting. This is after Star Wars. You can't get away with basic stage combat.
Well, if you think about it though, they didn't really care that much about stage combat or, you know, actual combat in movies until much later on, I would say.
Possible, yeah.
Because, I mean, think of the original trilogy sword fights and how...
This is true. Yeah, you really didn't get... Well, no, I think in Jedi, there was some good choreography. Even
there
Empire.
Was.
The only one that had bad choreography was New Hope with...
poor Alec Guinness.
Prowse and Alec Guinness, yeah. And I think...
And poor Prowse having to move in that fucking
yeah,
suit.
I think that was the issue because Guinness was trying.
I mean... It would have been funny to like place bets on that. Okay, who wins? Old
yeah.
man Alec or the dude in the ridiculous suit that he can't yeah. see or move in?
Right. But the other two had some decent fighting, and they
sure.
were way before this. So,
but if you also notice, they were only like a couple scenes in the whole movie.
Right, right.
They were very small parts where they actually used sword fighting. And that's why, because it's not an easy thing to pull off.
Yeah, yeah. They were relatively short scenes, and again, I'm kind of, I won't say an expert, but I know my stuff. And when I can say that's basic stage combat, and it looks cheesy because it's not even being done well, when the movie revolved around an eternal sword fight,
yes,
it was not a good choice.
More on sword fighting and less on the special effects.
Which were equally cheesy, and the stunts.
Well, the special effects were just, like... I don't know why they had to be so over the top. I mean, that was clearly
Russell
the Mulcahy. Intention, though.
That's why they had to be so over the top. Russell
yeah.
Mulcahy.
It's just blasting and lightning and...
And, okay, rolling back to that first one in the garage after the wrestling match.
Yeah.
Connor's opponent cartwheeling away.
Oh, yeah, that was ridiculous. Like, he's doing these flips. I'm like, why is he doing that?
Apparently it's faster than running for some reason.
I don't know. They had a gymnast on set that day.
Yeah, they hired a gymnast for that scene. They didn't hire a fight choreographer. Because I guarantee you, most of those moves they were using with the swords were things they learned in acting classes. They
Oh,
choreographed
definitely.
themselves. There
Yeah.
was no fight choreographer on this movie.
Yeah.
But they had a fill-in gymnast to do that flip for no apparent reason. Continuing with the nitpicking. Final scene. Kurgan has Connor on the ground. He's about to take the head. The love interest female cop runs in, hits him with a pipe. Obviously, he's Kurgan. It does nothing. He turns his back on Connor, who is perfectly conscious and relatively healthy, to scare the woman. And then Connor gets the upper hand on him. Why wouldn't you just push her out of the way and continue with the attack and finish him?
Well, that leads to the main problem I have with the whole story. Why didn't the Kurgan get him at so many points? You know? I mean,
He flat out said he'll be outside at the church, basically daring Kurgan to come after him.
and for
Kurgan
some
decides
reason,
not to.
Kurgan decides not to. You could take it all the way back to Scotland. He gets taken away by like a bunch of soldiers. Why doesn't he come back and look for him when he's wounded, you know? Why couldn't he take on the village? He's the Kurgan. Why does he? Well, I'm not sure where Connor was when he fights Ramirez. But yeah, why doesn't he wait for Connor to come back to the castle and get him then? Why? And why does it take centuries for them to finally meet and finally get to each other? I would have rather it had another bad immortal in the beginning to have, you know, confronted Connor and then do battle, and then the Kurgan, you know, they meet in New York City.
Yeah, don't make him the central villain for the entire movie when he's not really gonna do anything other than be
Right.
creepy.
Also, the scene where they're like in the park together and the Kurgan, you know, walks up and you see him in the background for the one scene where they're, you know, talking, you know, rather than just ambushing Connor, he waits, you know, he goes to his girlfriend's apartment to kidnap her instead.
Kurgan is kind of the typical cheesy villain. I mean, I think he may actually monologue at one point.
Oh, definitely.
He's the guy who is so impressed with his evilness that he has to show it off instead of actually doing the job. It's the line, I think I've referenced it on this show before. I
It's
quote
not
it all the
evil.
time. Yep. I've got a gun in my room. I'll go get it. We'll kill him together.
But you know, damn it, Clancy Brown, this is one of the best villains
Oh,
ever.
yeah. It's a brilliant performance. I mean, Clancy Brown is one of those actors who, for me, can do no wrong. And Connery, he's Connery, but he's still damn fun to watch.
They have a lot of fun just mugging their way through this, it feels like. And the Def Leppard
So horrible.
that has to be the weirdest scene of the movie, I think. Where they're in the church, and that's a nice touch where they can't fight on holy ground for some reason. Just to have that odd thing thrown in there.
It allows them to set up a scene where they can interact without having to fight.
Exactly,
And it, you
exactly.
need rules.
Yeah.
And I don't mean you need rules in actual life. I mean in stories, when you have magic, you need rules for it.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're meeting in this church, and they can't fight there, but apparently you can be a real asshole when you come in.
Incidentally, the church scene involving Kurgan was filmed at night with the permission of the priests in charge. Still, Brown's lines were ad-libbed and were reportedly considered so sacrilegious that the priests off camera were making the signs of the cross as he said them.
That's great. That's why the scene is so fucking weird. That explains a lot. They really were freaked out by
If
him.
the priests in the scene were the actual priests, and I can't see why they wouldn't be, why hire actors when you've got priests there and they
And the
don't
whole
really have
thing
long?
about him shaving his head as the disguise. hilarious. And they weren't taking that seriously. The way he delivers that line, he's being very sarcastic. Like, right. It's a disguise. Why the fuck did he shave his head?
Change of identity? Because, you know, you gotta die every so often?
I guess. I don't know.
But when you're like 7 feet tall, which Clancy Brown is, right. And you look like that, it's kind of hard to be somebody else.
But he didn't seem to have as much of a problem with the whole identity thing as Connor did,
right.
Or Russell Nash.
Because of a cop who had some preternatural ability to ferret out someone who wasn't who they say they are.
I love that. That was so... I wish they had gotten Jeff Goldblum to play that part.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that was such a Jeff Goldblum. Well, obviously, the way they deliver some of the lines, you're just like...
Yeah.
They knew exactly what they were doing here.
And now on to the part that cost it the brain that Clancy Brown and Sean Connery's performances bought it. The final quickening.
With the swirls of whatever. The
Looney Tunes episode on acid.
You know, Who Framed Roger Rabbit did take a lot from this, didn't it?
Yeah. And not in a good way.
I thought, you know, the judge was very Clancy Brown,
mm-hmm.
when he became, of course, yeah. the villain in the end.
Right. But, okay, he takes Kurgan's head and, you know, the fireworks and the, you know, window shattering and yada yada. And then there are these cartoon creatures circling him.
The dragon that he was hoping for.
Is that the dragon? Okay.
Probably.
It looks...
Once you mention it.
Seriously Looney Tunes.
Oh, of course.
And he's just kind of shaking in fear. And then it goes away and he suddenly has the power. And what happened to Kurgan's body?
Did that fly away?
It disappeared.
Well,
yet,
yeah.
The whole B story is about the cops finding the body from the beginning.
But then they started, like, flying and shit. Like, the one person that the Kurgan killed before, right. His final fight, that body, like, flew. I don't know if it flew away, but it flew.
But, okay, why did Kurgan's body disappear when none of the others did? Granted, he was the penultimate Highlander, or penultimate immortal, sorry. So maybe there's a some other rule they didn't inform us of there.
Yeah, I feel there's a lot that they left out.
Yeah.
And the one thing I really like about this movie is that they didn't feel the need to explain a whole lot.
More on that in 2 weeks, because we're doing the Renegade next week.
Because think about it. How many movies would have done the subject matter,
mm-hmm.
and would have put Scotland this year, you know, in, you know, 15, whatever.
Well, nope. I think they do give him a year.
I don't think, well, they say it somewhere in, like, yeah.
But they don't put it on as a chyron on the screen, no.
Yeah, like that first half hour of this movie, they are all over the place, mm-hmm. and not saying shit as to what is going on. Like, if you didn't know the plot of the movie, at first you're kind of like, maybe was this like an ancestor of his or something?
Yeah.
That's all I was thinking about. Like, if I had never seen this movie before,
good point, yeah.
I'd be like, is this, you know, wait a minute. Oh, it's the same guy?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you wouldn't have figured that out probably until about 20 minutes in.
I don't think that's a good thing, though.
Why not?
Well, I may be overlooking the batshit insanity. But I don't know. I never really thought of it as batshit insane, but come to think of it, you may be right.
Oh, yeah, it is. It totally is batshit insane.
Anyway, I'm done with my notes.
You know what? I've been doing this without my notes. I've actually... I've pretty much hit on them.
Okay.
You have Polito, Flip Happy, Sparkle Palooza. That's the... What did I used to describe? The opening sword fight. The New York scene, as I usually refer to it. Very Sam Raimi.
Yes, actually, you're right. Kurgan steals a car and joyrides with this old woman with one of the worst covers I've ever heard. All due respect to Queen, that was horrible.
I've always wanted to, like, find that.
But yeah, that was very Raimi. And I loved how, okay, he pulls out initially and the old woman's screaming, turns a corner, it's a jump cut, and then there's very obvious stunt woman hanging on to the front of the
Oh
car.
yeah. With the dress over the head so you can't see that it's a dude.
Well, it could have been a woman, but still,
It was most likely a dude.
probably. Yeah, that was. Maybe I should have adjusted my expectations. It wasn't what I expected it to be. Maybe that's my problem.
But the scene where he's driving and he's like going on the sidewalk and running people over and just the camera shot, and it was almost Raimi before Raimi, really.
Well, when was Evil Dead?
Evil Dead, I think, was before this, like the first one I'm thinking.
Okay.
But I'm thinking it was more of like Darkman Sam Raimi,
Oh yeah, good point. You're right.
which was after
Oh,
this.
after this, yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. No, Evil Dead 2 was 87.
Okay,
Evil
so
Dead
would
1
have been
was
before this.
81, though.
Yeah. But you're right, it is much more Darkman, which was later.
Yeah.
Huh. Maybe Raimi got it from this.
I could see, well, when we get to sequels and remakes, I think, you know.
Oh, we're there if you're done with your notes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if yeah, there's two different directions this could go in if you were to remake it.
Well, first off, there are a number of sequels: Highlander 2, The Quickening;
Of
Highlander
course.
3, The Sorcerer. Never saw that one.
But honestly, this needs a reboot,
Highlander
not a sequel.
Endgame and Highlander: The Source. Endgame had Adrian Paul, Duncan MacLeod. I don't remember exactly how they were related.
They were cousins.
Cousins, and I'm sure The Source did as well. There's also a live-action TV series that followed Duncan MacLeod, and the
Yes, it was very
animated
good.
series. It had its moments. From what I recall, I enjoyed it, and I
Oh
remember it being way better than this movie.
yeah.
But on to what you're chomping at the bit for. In March 2008, Summit Entertainment announced that it had bought the film rights to the Highlander franchise and is remaking the original film. Originally, Iron Man writers Art Markham and Matt Holloway were writing the script, but Summit Entertainment turned to Melissa Rosenberg to write it instead, with the release scheduled for 2011. In September 2009, Fast and Furious director Justin Lin was announced as the director of the film, while Neil H. Moritz was slated to co-produce.
That would have been terrible.
However, in August, Lin dropped out of the film due to commitments to other projects and was replaced by 28 weeks later director Juan Carlos Fresnadillo. I've had to use his name recently. I forget what it was he directed. Actually, I think we were talking about this remake. I've used his name a couple of times.
Yeah.
In June 2012, Ryan Reynolds was announced to play the lead role of Connor McLeod. I believe we
That
complained about that at the
would
time.
have been a disaster.
Due to creative differences, Fresnadillo left in November 2012 and Reynolds departed in June 2013. In October 2013, Cedric Nicholas Troyan, visual effects supervisor and second unit director on Snow White and the Huntsman, was hired to direct the film. It'll be his directorial debut. Filming is set to begin in 2014 using the original script by Art Markham and Matt Holloway. So the visual effects guy from Snow White and the Huntsman is directing.
Ah, who knows?
Well, he could be good. Who knows?
He
Yeah.
could be. It's he's from the right genre at least, you
True.
know?
Very true. And
Like
he doesn't have a history in music videos.
the Fast and Furious guy would have been
Yeah.
ridiculous. I mean, it would have made the scene with the Kurgan driving better, but you know,
That's about it.
aside from that, yeah, I can't see it. So yeah, I mean, it would have been cool if they gotten like Del Toro or Raimi to do
Yeah.
this. And I mean, yeah, you can reboot all of these other things. Some things have been franchises have been rebooted within the last decade
Oh
twice.
yeah, Spider-Man.
I mean,
And
why not reboot
I
this?
like the reboot, by the way, of Spider-Man. The
Oh
amazing
yeah.
and much better. At least the first movie. I haven't seen the second one yet.
I'm Spider-Man'd out. I don't know how many times I could see Spider-Man.
He had a New York accent. It's about fucking time.
I don't know how many. I'm done. I've seen it
Anyway, back to
already.
Highlander.
But there, you could do that. You know, a high effects person. I think an interesting approach to this would have been a low effect. You know,
Yeah.
just concentrate on the sword play.
Too practical.
And I mean, aside from the heads being cut off and maybe some light from that, just you know, go like completely low tech on it. Since these are low tech dyes.
Yeah. They're just using swords.
Yeah.
Just trying to think of another director. And I know I was defending him, but you know who would actually come closest to reproducing the original? Just occurs to me as I look over at my copy of Watchmen. Snyder. Put Snyder on this, it would be the original.
He would. He'd be very faithful to the original.
He'd be very faithful, but also consider his style. He is big and over the top in that way.
Yeah.
He would match it 1-to-1. I don't think that's a good thing.
I think, I mean, maybe this fantasy one that they're going with, this new guy will be good.
El Toro would be an amazing choice now that you mention it.
He would be. He really fucking would be. But
possibly,
you know,
Peter Jackson.
Somebody like Kenneth Branagh doing it, you know, just...
Interesting. He did well with Thor.
Just something completely, you know... Did he do Thor? Wow.
The first one, yeah.
Okay. But yeah, just something interesting, like that. Yeah. Very straight at least.
On to Brains?
On to Brains.
This was a 3 just for Brown and Connery up until that last quickening, and then it dropped a brain. I'm going to.
Wow. Wow.
It was crap.
This movie is so much fun, though, still. It's, I'd watch it again right now. It's just madness. The whole movie
true.
Is fucking madness. where the director's just so over the top. The screenplay is just, has anything been done like this? I don't know.
I think, like I said, that's why it was so popular. It's an interesting idea, an interesting story, and a lot of swords. And you know, it looked like a music video. That's why it was
popular.
Well,
it's the whole thing. I mean, you have the soundtrack from Queen, which
and
is
Queen.
Just insane. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that Princes of the Universe song has to be my favorite Queen song still, bar none.
I liked it. A little repetitive. But there are some great songs in the movie.
And actually, the love story in the movie... isn't annoying. Well, the first
true,
one, at least.
True. Yeah, the original isn't at all.
Or the middle one, I guess you could say. I mean, you really, like, think, wow, what would it be like to just, like, not die, you know, some your partner's growing older right before you, and you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it really took into a lot of consideration that most action movies wouldn't even go near. So you have all these concepts with the script, the insane over-the-top director, the musical chair of accents that they used to cast this.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't you put Sean Connery as Connor?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know he's
a little
and stuff,
old. But why would you hire someone Scottish?
Right.
And hire someone Spanish for Ramirez?
Right.
The casting I had mentioned, and I think I might have stolen part of this from someone, for the remake was... Ewan McGregor for Connor and Banderas for Ramirez.
Yeah. Oh, that would just be so awesome. That would be. They'd be perfect. Somebody, by the way, I think one of the actresses is the one that he rescued in World War II is actually Ewan McGregor's aunt.
Oh, wow.
Or was, I think.
She was a kid at that point. Granted, that was 30 years ago or so.
Yeah. So, yeah, this crazy cast, I'm still going 5, because I'd watch this if it were on right now.
And what have we learned?
We learned that New Jersey's the place to go to get shit done. And you can't have a climax with Good and Evil without a silver cup.
Right. And I learned that we really had no taste in the 80s.
I don't know. Well, you know what? They didn't, because this bombed.
Well, that's it. Okay. Interesting way to spin that. But did it bomb?
Well, think about it. It cost $16 million to make, and I was looking at, like, well, how did it do box office-wise? And I think it grossed, like, $12 million worldwide.
Hmm. All right.
I mean, granted, they made their money back later.
It's such a classic now, particularly among geeks. It's kind of a sacred cow.
I'm one of the few people that saw this in the theater when it was first out. My buddies... Of course, I mean, swords in a movie were like first in line.
I just tend to think that because of how big it is now, particularly among the geeks, that it was popular at the time, but I guess not.
Yeah, it's IMDb saying 12.8 worldwide.
actually, come to think of it, it kind of had a renaissance in the 80s. Or in the 90s, I should say.
The series brought this back.
In the 90s, yeah, that's when people
Yeah.
started to look back on the movie and think it was good again.
Because the sequel that was released, people wanted to kill them.
Right, yeah, there were
And
a
then they
lot
did
of
the
controversies.
show,
Again, more on
and they
that in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But yeah, the series, people loved it. It's on, I think it's still on Netflix. I should go back and
It
check it out.
probably is.
All right, so until 2 weeks from now, when we'll be reviewing Highlander 2, the Renegade Edition, we're doing the Renegade Edition first for some odd reason. It's here. It would make sense to do the original, but we're doing that afterward. I guess we want the better version first.
I've never seen the Renegade version.
Come to
In
think of it, neither
fact,
have I. I've only seen The Quickening, the original, once.
I've seen that in the theater, and I think I may have seen it once again, like pieces of it after that. Just shook my head and turned off
Ha.
the.
Which is worse, the aliens or the big energy sphere around the Earth?
Tough to say, but
We'll
we have
get to
two
that in 2 weeks,
episodes.
in a few weeks from now.
Yeah.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to. Links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. Oh, and YouTube. Links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review, up to 203, I want to say. Yeah, 1, 2 is the Highlander 2, and then 3 is Reformed Schoolgirls.
Oh, a movie that we should do in the future, and I think it may be on the list, and it's in relation to Highlander,
Okay.
because it's the same screen, it's the same writer. Prophecy.
I'd be up for that. I don't think it's on the list. I will check. Otherwise, it will be added.
And when I saw that this is the same dude, I was like, it makes perfect
Oh,
fucking
absolutely.
sense.
Yeah.
The immortals in Prophecy are the angels.
Yeah, that was the one
And
with
they're,
Walken, right?
yeah.
And
So
Glenn Danzig, yeah.
imagine if they did the Highlander with Christopher Walken as,
Yeah, basically. You also find the request form. If you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, leave it on the request form. We'll get to it. And the recommendations list. Before I started watching this, I will actually count it as hours. 9 hours ago, I was sure this was going to be on the rec list.
I was too.
And then I watched it. And you were still willing to put it there.
Oh, definitely.
You can also email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZT01, or for the alphanumerically challenged,
For the
401.
200th time, they can go fuck themselves.
Don't think you've said it every time.
No, probably not.
414-368-9861. You always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee, and until 2 weeks from now, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.
This cannot be. It's the devil's work.
And we're
Riley,
going.
I'm glad you recorded that.
I got the tail end. It's not that good.
All right.